Yours.
Great. Thank you so much, Rob. I'd like to give a warm welcome to all of you. Thank you so much for joining our Implementation Research Group Cyber Seminar today. I'm the director of this collaborative, and in this month, we've actually surpassed the 800 mark. We have something like 820 members in the collaborative now, so it's really nice to see it thriving and growing like this. And I will also be putting a link in the chat once I'm done speaking for anyone who happened to join the seminar just because of the particular speaker or content and you weren't aware that we have this robust implementation collaborative. I will include a link so that you can join. There's a newsletter that comes out every month with a lot of good information, including multiple events that we have each month. And so now I'd like to introduce our speaker for today. I'm so happy that he's here with us. Dr. John Fortney is a professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Washington School of Medicine. And he's also the director of the Division of Population Health and a core investigator at the HSR&D Center for Innovation for Veteran-Centered and Value-Driven Care at the VA Puget Sound Healthcare System and the director of the VA Virtual Specialty Care Query Center. And for the last 25 years, his research has focused on access to care. And he has conducted clinical trials to test the effectiveness of virtual care technologies to facilitate the delivery of evidence-based mental health services in rural primary care clinics, and also conducted implementation trials to test the effectiveness of strategies to promote the uptake of virtual care technologies by primary care patients and providers. And so he has a lot of expertise, and he's going to be speaking with us today about differentiating between two types of methodologies, and those will be pragmatic trial methodologies and implementation science. They've evolved from very different disciplines, but they do share some similar design features, so much so that these types of trials can easily be conflated, creating the potential for any of us to mislabel our trial type or mistakenly use the wrong trial type to answer our research questions. And not only that, but these blurred boundaries between trial types can hamper the evaluation of grant applications and the scientific interpretation of findings and policymaking. So in the seminar today, Dr. Fortney will clarify the similarities and differences of these trial types to help make this more clear for funders, researchers, and policymakers. And in addition, he will provide recommendations to help investigators choose, label, and operationalize the most appropriate trial type. So I think this is going to be a wonderful session. And as Rob said, we always have a really engaged audience. So please don't forget anytime throughout to go ahead and look for the three dots towards the right of the screen. You'll be able to pull up the Q&A panel and you can type in your questions for us at any time. So thank you again so much for joining. And now I will turn things over to Dr. Fortney.
Thanks so much, Christine. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon to those on the East Coast. Before I start, I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators on this presentation, Jeff Curran from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, Aaron Lyon, my colleague here at UW Psychiatry, Devin Check from Duke, and David Flum at the University of Washington Surgery, Department of Surgery. Our article with the same title as this presentation just got published in JGIM 2 weeks ago. I believe there's a link in the chat or maybe the Q&A. Thank you, Rob. I'm a better writer than speaker, so you're probably best off leaving the presentation and going just read the article. Before I get started, I also have some disclosures. We have no conflicts of interest. The work was supported by a number of grants from VA, PCORI, and NIH, though the views expressed in the presentation, the paper, are those of the authors and don't reflect those of VA, NIH, or PCORI. I will confess right off the bat that in one of those grant applications, I wrote that we would propose to conduct a cluster randomized pragmatic hybrid type 2 trial. Which I hope by the end of this presentation you'll realize is complete nonsense. First, I want to start out with some definitions. Clinical interventions are treatments like psychotherapy or treatment modalities, mental health, or service models like patient-centered medical homes that are designed to directly impact patient outcomes, and implementation strategies or promote the uptake of evidence-based clinical interventions and indirectly impact patient outcomes. We acknowledge that the distinction between clinical interventions and implementation strategies is sometimes blurred, especially with regard to interventions designed to promote patient engagement and treatment like telehealth. But for the purpose of this presentation, we're just going to assume these are separate things. A couple more definitions. Thorpe et al. Defined pragmatic trials as primarily designed to determine the effectiveness of a clinical intervention under the usual conditions in which it will be applied. And Jeff Kern et al. Defined a hybrid effectiveness implementation trial as one that takes a dual focus a priori in assessing clinical effectiveness and implementation. And he encouraged investigators to use these hybrid trials, and we all drank the Kool-Aid on that one. In the context of the bench to bedside translational research, the difference between explanatory trials, also known as efficacy trials on the far left, and pragmatic trials, also known as effectiveness trials in the middle, are well understood. Explanatory trials are designed to answer the question, can this research work under ideal conditions? In contrast, pragmatic trials are designed to answer the question, does this intervention work under routine care conditions? Acknowledging that most trials are not purely explanatory trials nor purely pragmatic trials, the PRECIS, the Pragmatic Explanatory Continuum Indicator Summary, the PRECIS tool provides guidelines for describing where on the explanatory pragmatic continuum a trial falls. On the other end of the translational research continuum on the right-hand side, the difference between pragmatic trials and a pure implementation trial is also well understood. Pragmatic trials test the effectiveness of clinical interventions by comparing differences in patient health status. Implementation trials test the success of implementation strategies designed to promote the use of evidence-based practices previously demonstrated to be effective in routine care. Implementation trials are designed to answer the question, does this implementation strategy successfully promote the uptake of this evidence-based practice in routine care? And the primary outcomes of these types of trials are typically include things like how many providers adopted the evidence-based practice, whether it was delivered with high fidelity, i.e. as intended, and how many patients were reached, i.e. received the evidence-based practice. Speed up the process by which evidence-based practices are developed and adapted. As I said, Curran encouraged researchers to consider using hybrid effectiveness implementation trials, and by doing one hybrid trial instead of two sequential pragmatic followed by an implementation trial, the bench-to-bedside timeline can be shortened. However, the differences between the pragmatic trials and the hybrid trials are really not well understood. And there are three types of hybrid trials as depicted in this graph. And I'm going to go over those real quickly for those who aren't familiar with the three different types. So hybrid type ones primarily test the effectiveness of a clinical intervention while exploring barriers to implementation and potential strategies for overcoming those barriers. Typically, that would be your AIM 3 in your grant application. Hybrid type 3 trials primarily assess the success of implementation strategies while secondarily examining the effectiveness of the clinical intervention being implemented. Hybrid type 2s place roughly equal importance on comparing clinical interventions and implementation strategies. And there are two subtypes. There's type B, which is a dual randomization type where two or more clinical interventions and two or more implementation strategies are compared simultaneously. Those are really hard to pull off. And a type B, which are a pilot implementation type where two more clinical interventions are compared while one implementation strategy is being evaluated. Much easier to do. Thus, there are three trial types, pragmatic, hybrid type one, and hybrid type two. That test the effectiveness of clinical interventions in routine care, and two trial types, hybrid type 2s and 3s, which test the success of implementation strategies to promote the evidence-based practice uptake in routine care. All right, so if you're not confused already, I'm going to give you an example of that will hopefully make you more confused. The purpose of this presentation is to clarify the similarities and differences between pragmatic trials and hybrid trials for funders, researchers, and policymakers, acknowledging that most trials are not pure pragmatic trials nor pure hybrid trials, but the blurred boundaries can really hamper the evaluation of grant applications, scientific interpretation of findings, and policymaking. So to illustrate this, we highlight a recent paper published from a PCORI trial that's self-labeled as a pragmatic cluster randomized controlled trial of integrating behavioral health into mental care. This trial was really big. It recruited 42 primary care clinics from 13 states, consented 3,000 patients with chronic physical and behavioral health problems. The two comparators are described as co-location slash integration of mental health specialists and primary care. That's arm one. And arm two is co-location of integrated mental health specialists and primary care plus online education, workbooks, remote QI coaching, and an online community of practice. The primary outcome is specified as change in patients' health symptoms, especially mental health symptoms. And the secondary outcome is specified as fidelity to the integrated care. So you'll notice that the clinical intervention in both these arms is co-located integrated care. The results of this trial found that among the 30 health outcomes that were examined, none of them were significantly different between arms, and there was no difference in fidelity between two arms. So I'm gonna try a little interaction thing here. We'll see if it works. If you could just put in the Q&A, what type of trial you think this is after hearing the description of it. And Christine, maybe you could read off some of those to me.
Sure, I will be happy to do that. Let's see.
Attendees, if you don't see the Q&A, click in the three dots, the ellipses in the far right bottom corner, and you'll see Q&A in a submenu there. Click on Q&A, and it will open up as a panel, just like the chat and participants.
Yep, so thank you for those who are typing an answer. So one of the answers is type 2 hybrid.
Okay.
And another is another type 2 hybrid and a type 1 hybrid. Type 2A hybrid.
All right.
Type 1, type 1, type 2, type 2. Looks like we have kind of a, someone put hybrid, unsure what type. Someone put pragmatic trial, comparative effectiveness. There's actually so many coming in. I don't think I can read them all, but yeah.
I think I made my point here, which is it's hard to tell, and there's not consensus in that brief description I gave. So
yes,
I'm going to revisit that at the end of this talk, and hopefully there'll be better consensus. So there are a lot of similarities between these trial types. All the clinical interventions are delivered in routine care settings. The clinical interventions are usually delivered by routine care providers. There's expected to be broad inclusion criteria, minimal exclusion criteria. Fidelity is almost always measured, and the analyses are usually used in intention to treat. The greatest similarities are usually between the pragmatic trials and the hybrid type 2 trials, as we kind of heard from the responses there, because both are designed to measure the effectiveness of clinical interventions which have previously been shown to be effective, at least in some population settings or delivery modalities. But there are important differences between the pragmatic and hybrid trials. And there are really six main types of differences between the trial types. And I want to go through each of these. They are what is specified as the primary outcome, whether the implementation strategies are specified and how, what the secondary aims of the project are, the attention to fidelity. And so a couple of terms I'm going to define: artificial versus practical implementation strategies, the use of those, and the use of evidence-based versus novel implementation strategies. So starting out with primary outcomes, and I'll say I'm just for shorthand here, PT is a pragmatic trial, HT1 is a hybrid type 1, HT2 is a type 2, and HT3 is a hybrid type 3. So pragmatic trials, along with hybrid type 1 and 2 trials, compare the effectiveness of two or more clinical interventions. Therefore, the primary or co-primary in the case of HT2 outcomes are usually specified as patient-level outcomes, often health status. But they can be things like treatment adherence, procedural complications, side effects, lab results, symptoms, functioning, hospital readmission, et cetera. Because hybrid type 2s and 3s compare two or more implementation strategies, the primary, or in the case of HT2, co-primary outcomes are usually specified as implementation success. So again, provider adoption, provider fidelity, and patient reach. Hybrid type 3 trials are usually expected to specify patient health only as a secondary outcome because the implementation strategy only indirectly affects patient health. Because hybrid type 2s and 3s are evaluating the success of an implementation strategy, often hypothesizing that one's superior to another, the implementation strategies are always pre-specified in grant applications, trial registries, protocol papers, and they're described in detail in the results manuscripts. For example, people might use the ERIC implementation strategy labels described in the Powell paper below. However, historically, the implementation strategies in most pragmatic trials and hybrid type 1 trials are not pre-specified, and they're often not even post-specified. In the results manuscripts. And if they are, they're not usually called implementation strategies, as Sarah Landis has pointed out. For example, they might be labeled things like provider training and supervision. As I'll discuss later, this lack of pre or post specification of the implementation strategies in pragmatic trials and hybrid type 1 trials can actually make them difficult to distinguish in some cases. Another difference between trial types is whether moderation or mediation analyses are specified as secondary aims. So moderation analyses test interaction effects, such as whether the impact of the clinical intervention depends on the characteristics of the patient, also known as treatment heterogeneity analyses. And hybrid type 2s and 3s can theoretically conduct moderation analyses to see whether the provider, clinic, or organizational contextual factors like those identified in CFER, are effect modifiers for the implementation strategy. But moderation analyses are much less common in hybrid type 2s and 3s because the small number of providers, clinics, or organizations in most trials results in inadequate statistical power, so you don't see them very often. It's rare. Mediation analyses determine how a clinical intervention is improving patient outcomes, i.e. through what clinical mechanism of action, and are often conducted in hybrid type 1 trials, and they're always conducted in efficacy trials. Mediation analyses are not typically conducted in pragmatic trials because the mechanisms of action for the clinical intervention have usually already been identified in an explanatory trial. Hybrid type 2s and 3s should determine how an implementation strategy is promoting uptake. Carl Lewis has a nice article about that. So, you know, what implementation mechanism of action is improving uptake? An exemplar in this regard is a hybrid type 3 trial conducted by Williams and colleagues that randomized 475 mental health clinicians and 14 children's mental health agencies to usual implementation or a novel implementation strategy to improve organizational culture. To increase uptake of evidence-based practices. Results demonstrated that the organizational improvement implementation strategy significantly and substantially increased the use of evidence-based practices. And as hypothesized, the improvements in organizational culture partially mediated the effect of the implementation strategy on the use of EPBs. So you should see mediation analyses in these in the hybrid type 2s and 3s. Okay, fidelity. The implementation outcomes of adoption and reach are frequently specified as outcomes / dependent variables in hybrid type 2 and 3 trials, but are rarely measured or reported in pragmatic trials or hybrid type 1 trials. However, the implementation outcome of fidelity isn't quite so straightforward. Fidelity represents the degree to which the clinical intervention is delivered as intended. Adaptation is encouraged, where adaptation is the deliberate, fidelity-consistent changes to the adaptable periphery of the clinical intervention to improve fit, engagement, and effectiveness. But deviation from the core intervention components is discouraged because it's expected that that would reduce the effectiveness of the clinical intervention. So a fundamental difference between pragmatic and hybrid trials concerns the role of fidelity. Specifically, whether it's intervened upon, how it's intervened upon, how much it's intervened upon, whether this intervening on fidelity is pre-specified, if fidelity is reported as only a descriptive variable, or whether it's analyzed as a dependent variable. Because the purpose of hybrid type ones is to determine whether an intervention can be effective in routine care settings, investigators are expected to intervene on fidelity as much as needed, and they can use artificial strategies to do so. I'm going to define artificial in the next slide. Because the purpose of pragmatic trials is to estimate the effectiveness of clinical interventions in routine care, fidelity is reported descriptively, like a hybrid type 1, but it's not intervened upon more than the healthcare system's normal quality improvement activities would do. So it uses practical strategies to intervene on fidelity. That's the main difference between hybrid ones and pragmatic trials. Both and hybrid type ones usually don't pre-specify or specify what their implementation strategies are on fidelity, and they're reported descriptively. Pragmatic trials are expected to pre-specify what their implementation strategies are, though that's not always the case. In contrast, hybrid type twos and threes test the effectiveness of an implementation strategy designed to maximize fidelity. So intervention on fidelity in these trials is typically done with a novel but practical strategy. So usually testing a new implementation strategy, or at least new for that context. Because you're testing hypotheses about the strategies, they're always pre-specified and described quite clearly. And fidelity is analyzed as a dependent variable. So you want to see if there's a difference in fidelity between two groups. So an example, Monson and colleagues conducted a hybrid type 3 trial to compare fidelity to a protocolized psychotherapy for PTSD across three groups of therapists randomized to either training with no consultation, or training plus standard consultation, or training plus consultation involving audio review and selected therapy sessions. There were no differences in fidelity associated when independent raters looked at them across the three groups, suggesting that augmenting the training with consultation, either type, was not effective in this context. Okay, as promised, now I'll next discuss what I mean by the term artificial and practical that I used in the previous slide. So artificial implementation strategies are not feasibly replicated in routine care settings without the support of research dollars. So examples would be adoption in your trial is artificially increased by using research funds to pay for the intervention delivery. So you're not billing for it. Maybe you're paying the salaries of the providers to deliver the care. That's artificial. It couldn't be done without the research dollars. An example of reach being artificially increased would be advertising in the community for trial participants, or putting up flyers in elevators, things like that. That's not how people get into treatment. An example of fidelity being artificially increased would be some monitoring fidelity frequently and retraining or removing clinicians with poor fidelity. Healthcare systems usually don't fire clinicians with poor fidelity, so that's an artificial thing to do. Hybrid type 1 trials are more likely to use artificial implementation strategies while then exploring promising practical implementation strategies as kind of the third aim of their project. Practical implementation strategies are those that are expected to be replicable outside the context of a research project. So if some healthcare system wanted to implement an evidence-based practice, they could do it with the resources that they had without being propped up by research funding. So these would include things like training and audit feedback that are relatively easy to do. So an example of a hybrid type 1 is a study by Ghosh and colleagues of tobacco treatment and oncology centers. They report in this hybrid type 1 report requiring a week-long training for study counselors, followed by investigator reviews of counseling session recordings and weekly supervision meetings to review all cases to optimize fidelity. After this trial is over, they'll conduct focus groups which will assess more practical implementation strategies for this tobacco treatment intervention. And this hopefully will increase the generalizability to healthcare systems who want to adopt this evidence-based practice. Pragmatic trials, in contrast to hybrid ones, pragmatic trials, hybrid type twos and threes need to use practical strategies to ensure external validity. Pragmatic trials mostly differ from hybrid type one trials because they rely on practical implementation strategies rather than artificial ones. So that's the main difference between hybrid type ones and pragmatic trials. And this is why hybrid type ones, but pragmatic trials need to conduct the exploratory research to identify the practical implementation strategies. Pragmatic trials should already be using those. When the implementation strategies are used in hybrid type ones and pragmatic trials are not described, it's really impossible to tell the difference between these two types of trials. Okay, just like interventions and implementation strategies can fall along the continuum of evidence-based to novel, implementation strategies can as well. So novel implementation strategies are ones that are not known to be effective in the context of which they're being used. Evidence-based implementation strategies are known to be effective in the context of which they're used. So to ensure high fidelity, pragmatic trials should always use evidence-based implementation strategies, or they should compare clinical interventions that do not face meaningful implementation barriers at all. So for example, David Flum, one of my co-authors, compared two treatments for appendicitis, antibiotics versus surgery. Both of these treatments had already been adopted into routine care, were commonly used, so they didn't need to use any implementation strategies. But if a pragmatic trial has to use implementation strategies, they need to be practical and they need to be evidence-based. Many hybrid type 2Bs and hybrid type 3s are comparing novel implementation strategy to a commonly used implementation strategy known to be marginally successful, often called usual implementation. An example would be to train providers and hope they deliver the intervention as intended. An example is by Michael Couture at UAMS. He randomized rural psychotherapists to standard training in cognitive behavioral therapy for depression and anxiety, or standard training plus computer support, which is the novel implementation strategy. Therapists randomized to the training plus computer support were substantially more likely to follow the therapy protocol with fidelity. That was their primary outcome. And the patients experienced statistically greater improvements in symptoms. That was their secondary outcome. Hybrid type 2Bs and hybrid type 3s can also compare a novel low-intensity, low-cost implementation strategy to one that's known to be effective but is more resource-intensive or higher cost. That's not as common, but makes a lot of sense to do those types of trials as well. So acknowledging that the trial types fall along a continuum, the differences between trial types can be demarcated along the following four dimensions: what the primary outcome is, what the attention to fidelity is, whether artificial or practical implementation strategies are being used, and whether evidence-based or novel implementation strategies are being used. Moderation versus mediation can also be helpful to differentiate the trials. So I got the order of the bullets here wrong. Start off with the hybrid type ones. So the hybrid type ones, the primary outcome is always patient health status. Fidelity is described, but not analyzed as a dependent variable. Fidelity is intervened upon using artificial strategies, hopefully evidence-based, and they're usually not specified as implementation strategies. Similarly, pragmatic trials, primary outcome is also patient health status. Fidelity is also described, but fidelity should be intervened on using pre-specified practical evidence-based strategies. So that's the difference between hybrid type ones and pragmatic trials, is that the implementation strategies should be practical and evidence-based, whereas hybrid type ones can be artificial. Hybrid type twos and threes, the primary outcome is implementation success and patient health for hybrid type twos. Fidelity is usually specified as a dependent variable, but not always. But fidelity is almost always intervened on using pre-specified practical strategies, and one is usually a novel strategy. that's comparing two different strategies. Mediation analyses in hybrid type 2s and 3s will look at the mechanism of action. Mediation analyses in hybrid type 1s will look at the clinical mechanism of action. And moderation analysis and pragmatic trials will look at treatment heterogeneity. So let's revisit this trial type. But before we do, Christine, are there any clarification questions in the Q&A that you think I need to address at this time?
There actually are not. In fact, we don't have any questions yet. Well, let's see. Actually, we just got one. I don't know if this is really a clarification, this question from Ronnie, but is there a rule about how many sites in a study or trial make it a PT versus hybrid? It seems that there are some thoughts that PT require many more sites.
It's certainly true that PCORI likes to fund large trials with lots of patients and lots of sites. There is not a rule in my mind about the size of the trial. It might have to do with the moderation analyses. So to examine moderation analyses in pragmatic trials, you do need large sample size so you can look at whether the clinical intervention is less effective for certain subgroups, maybe small subgroups of patients. That kind of tends to drive the size of the sample in pragmatic trials when you're doing power analyses. But no, I wouldn't say there's any hard and fast rule about how many patients or how many clinics.
Okay, good to know. And I would say this one's a clarification question. So I thought for hybrid 2 and 3, different implementation strategies are being compared. It looks like you're saying that one implementation strategy can be compared to usual care. Is that correct?
So in hybrid type 2Bs and hybrid type 3s, the person is absolutely correct. You're comparing two or more implementation strategies. Often one is a usual care implementation strategy, which is expected to not do as well as the novel implementation strategy. This trial here, arm one, appears to have no implementation strategy associated with it. So in that case, it's comparing one implementation strategy to no implementation support. I'm sure they got like instructions about what to do, but hybrid type 2 A's, if I get my A's and B's right, often are only mostly looking at the difference between two clinical interventions while examining the success of one implementation strategy. Is it feasible? Does it seem to keep fidelity high enough? So type 2 A's don't necessarily have two implementation strategies they're comparing.
Okay, great. Maybe just one more, and okay. Then the rest of these I think are different. We can save, but so for a hybrid type 3, should there always be preliminary data on the implementation strategies being tested, or can there be novel implementation strategies that have not been formally piloted but have been generated through implementation or intervention mapping?
I would say in a hybrid type 3, there should always be a novel implementation strategy you're testing to see whether it works in that context.
Mm-hmm.
Good to have pilot data that to convince reviewers that it's got a chance of being better than the comparison implementation strategy. One of the implementation strategies, as I said, could be kind of usual implementation that's not expected to do all that well. Or in other cases, it can be a high resource, high cost implementation strategy that everybody knows works, but it just takes up too many resources. So you're looking for something that's a little easier to do, but just as effective, kind of non-inferiority type of implementation trial.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. So I think that's got some good clarification questions answered. There's a few more that we can save probably for towards the end.
Okay.
Q&A. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
So going back to the Littenberg trial, arm one is integration of mental health specialists into primary care. Arm two is integration of mental health specialists into primary care plus implementation support. So online education, workbooks, remote coaching, community of practice. I would characterize these as practical, probably evidence-based implementation strategies. The primary outcome is change in patient's health status, mental health symptoms. So they had 30 clinic patient health status outcomes, about 9 primary and a couple. And then their secondary outcome is clearly identified as fidelity to the integrated care model. They've got a pretty nice tool to measure fidelity to integrated care, PIP. So in the paper, we actually created a decision tree to help people figure out what type of trial it is. And so I'm just gonna go through this decision tree and try to answer the questions as best I think for this trial, and go through the tree and see where we end up. So at the top, we start out with, are any of the implementation strategies artificial? If the answer would have been yes, it would be a hybrid type 1 trial, I think. But the answer is no. Those implementation strategies could be used by any healthcare system without research dollars. They're not particularly expensive or difficult to pull off. So going down to the next box, are all implementation strategies evidence-based? If that was true, then this could be a pragmatic trial. But I don't think that's true. I don't think that that combination of implementation strategies, there's evidence that that helps increase outcomes or fidelity of integrating mental health into primary care. So I'm gonna say no to that. Go down to the next question. Is a measure of clinical effectiveness a primary outcome? So for this trial, if fidelity had been the primary outcome and patient health status would have been a secondary outcome, the answer to this would have been no, and that would have made this a hybrid type 3 trial, which it almost is, but it's not quite, because they specified patient health status, their symptoms, as the primary outcome. So we go down to the next box. Are more than 2 clinical interventions being compared? If the answer was yes, this would probably be a hybrid type 2, type 2A or type B. But the answer to the question was no. There was only 1 clinical intervention. That was integrating mental health and co-locating mental health providers in primary care settings and integrating them with the primary care team. So there's only 1 clinical intervention. The answer is no. So we end up in a box that we label suboptimal, which indicates that there's an incongruence between the scientific aims and the trial type that was chosen. So the answer to the question, all those things you put in the chat, I think was really interesting, but I think this trial actually doesn't really have a well-defined trial type that addresses its specific aims. Okay, I'm now gonna go on a little bit of a tangent. While fidelity should not be controlled artificially in pragmatic trials and hybrid type 2 trials, it's uninformative and unethical to compare 2 clinical interventions that are delivered with such low fidelity that patients are unlikely to experience a clinical improvement. So both pragmatic and hybrid type 2 trials must ensure that fidelity to the clinical interventions is sufficient to produce pre and post clinical improvement among the patients. Therefore, fidelity to the core functions of the clinical intervention should be monitored during both types of trials using practical methods, if possible, i.e. replicable outside the research. And whenever fidelity is so low that patients are not benefiting clinically, the trial should be rescued. And we call this is when your trial is hopefully going down the middle of the road, but it ends up in the ditch. Patients are not getting well, the intervention's not being delivered correctly, and you are contributing nothing to science to compare 1 or 2 low fidelity clinical interventions. If possible, the trial should be rescued by increasing the intensity of pre-specified practical evidence-based implementation strategies and or adding post-hoc practical evidence-based implementation strategies. And these are what we call guardrails. If the guardrails have to involve artificial strategies, then your pragmatic trial or hybrid type 2 trial becomes a hybrid type 1 trial by default. And that might be okay, not ideal, but it might be okay. For hybrid type 2 trials, it might not be okay because the investigators must also weigh the disadvantages of making post hoc modifications to their implementation strategies, thereby sacrificing their co-primary aim of comparing their pre-specified implementation strategies to rescue their other co-primary aim of comparing their clinical interventions. So that's our fidelity, that's our ditch and guardrail tangent. So I just want to conclude with a couple of recommendations. And these complement reporting guidelines for clinical effectiveness trials and implementation trials, specifically the template for intervention description and replication checklist and guide, TIDEER. It's published in the British Medical Journal in 2014 by Tammy Hoffman and colleagues. And the Standards for Reporting Implementation Studies Statement, STARI, published in the British Medical Journal in 2017 by Hilary Hancock and friends. So the first recommendation is that hybrid, it's a kind of a summary of the talk, is that hybrid type 1 trials should be used to determine whether a clinical intervention can be effective when delivered in routine care. And pragmatic and hybrid type 2 trials should be used to determine whether an evidence-based clinical intervention is effective when delivered with practical implementation strategies in routine care. In contrast, hybrid type 2 and 3 trials should be used to determine whether practical and novel implementation strategies successfully promote the uptake of evidence-based clinical interventions. Second, in all pragmatic trials and hybrid trials, the implementation strategies used to intervene on fidelity should be pre-specified and classified as artificial or practical and novel or evidence-based in the target healthcare system. If this is not clear-cut, the degree of artificiality and the quality of the evidence should be described and discussed. The implementation strategies used should be reported in the research proposal, study protocols, and all publications so that readers can decide what type of trial it is. Third, hybrid type 1s may and usually do use artificial fidelity monitoring methods and artificial implementation strategies to ensure high fidelity, but they should conduct process evaluations to explore the potential for using more practical strategies. As I stated earlier, pragmatic trials are different from hybrid type 1 trials because they rely on more practical implementation strategies rather than artificial ones. That's why the hybrid type 1s, but not pragmatic trials, need to conduct exploratory research to identify practical implementation strategies. But in the spirit of hybridization, Jeff Kern's idea about that, and speeding up the bench to bedside timeline, pragmatic trials could also start conducting process evaluations to facilitate the large-scale rollout of clinical interventions proven to be effective in routine care. Such process evaluations are currently recommended for pragmatic trials, especially for multi-site trials testing complex interventions, though the focus tends to be on documenting how well the intervention was implemented, i.e. fidelity, in order to interpret the observed effectiveness of the intervention on improving clinical outcomes. But pragmatic trialists might consider expanding such process evaluations to look at three things. To optimize the implementability of the clinical intervention if it's found to be overly complex. They may have argued in their grant application that it would be easy to implement and it found out that it needed to be modified more than they thought. So they could examine that. They could also improve the practicality of the implementation strategies if any of those were determined to be overly artificial for the setting that they were doing the research in. They may have thought that they were practical and argued that in the grant application, but that turned out not to be the case. And they could identify settings, clinics, organizations that are conducive to future implementation based on observed provider level or organizational level or environmental barriers. PCORI is now funding not hybrid trials or implementation trials, but implementation projects that take an evidence-based practice and try to get it up to scale. And preparing for one of those implementation projects during a pragmatic trial probably makes sense. The next recommendation is that hybrid type 2s and 3s are expected to test novel implementation strategies or implementation strategies without an evidence base in the target setting. In contrast, pragmatic trials should use practical implementation strategies that have an evidence base in the target setting. Otherwise, the investigators run the risk of having to apply artificial implementation strategies post hoc to maintain adequate fidelity. And ideally, implementation strategies used to intervene on fidelity should also be pre-specified. And although post-hoc additions to the implementation strategies may be needed if there are unforeseen barriers to achieving high fidelity. Which leads to the last recommendation about ditches and guardrails. So during pragmatic trials and hybrid type 2 trials, fidelity should be monitored using practical methods. And if fidelity drops below a minimum threshold, the ditch, that's expected to result in a lack of pre-post clinical improvement among patients, the research team should increase the number and intensity of practical implementation strategies to promote fidelity. Such guardrails are not necessary in hybrid type 3s because clinical effectiveness is not one of the primary outcome, although they can use adaptive implementation strategies as is often being done these days. So with that, Christina, I'd like to take some questions or comments. Maybe not everybody agrees with what we're arguing.
Yes, great. Thank you so much. I'm going to give you the award, Dr. Fortney, for maybe the most questions we've ever received in these seminars.
I'm not sure I like that.
There's a lot of questions in here, and you know, we already went through a group of them, but there's a lot more. So truly, I really do appreciate that the audience is so engaged, and obviously this is a topic that they're very interested in, and it's challenging sometimes to understand. So I'll step through some of these, and I apologize. I have a feeling we won't be able to get through all of them within our allotted time. But so this question is, it seems that even evidence-based strategies must be tailored in order to be used within a trial. So distinguishing evidence-based from practical strategies is often impossible. What are your thoughts on this?
Yep. So we fully acknowledge that there's a continuum between novel and evidence-based. And if there's a situation where you cannot say whether it's where it is on that continuum, that just needs to be made clear in your grant application and in your papers that that's the case. And that really does kind of make it more difficult for you to put a label on your trial type. You know, is it a pragmatic trial or is it a hybrid type 1? You know, that's a really good point. It's not always impossible, but it is often difficult. I agree with that.
Okay, thank you. So the next question, all of these types of studies are fairly contrived in that the implementation is occurring in the context of a research study, trial or not. Implementation strategies and outcomes may not be sustained beyond the trial or study simply because they don't align well with how things are routinely done. How does this come into play?
First part of that statement is definitely true. I think it has to do with this issue of artificial versus practical strategies. If you're testing an implementation strategy that is not replicable without research dollars behind it, really question the external validity or generalizability of your findings. So you should be questioning why you're using that testing that implementation strategy. If it's something that's so difficult to do that it can't be sustained after the research is over, then that's got poor generalizability to the healthcare systems that might want to try and use it. So it often happens to us. Implementation science is very difficult. We fail more than we succeed. But we should be trying to test in the hybrid trials, hybrid type 2s and 3s, we should be trying to test practical implementation strategies.
So that ties in perfectly to this next question. This person says that what is considered practical for one setting may not be practical for another. So their comment is perhaps another term instead of practical would be useful. I'm not sure if you have thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We in the paper, we definitely make that point. So
okay.
The practicality or artificiality of the implementation strategy absolutely depends on what the setting is. So if it's Kaiser Permanente, there might be easy to do some kind of audit and feedback with a QI team. If it's a federally qualified health center that doesn't have those QI resources in it, that would be artificial implementation strategies. Yeah, absolutely. When you're describing the practicality of your implementation strategy, it has to be within the context of the healthcare system with which it's being tested. Good point.
Great, thank you. So this comment is, within the pain management collaboratory, some members of our community have asserted that all pragmatic clinical trials should be designed as hybrid pragmatic implementation studies. Do you have any comments about this recommendation?
As I said in the beginning, one of the grants I wrote said we're going to conduct a pragmatic hybrid trial. And I don't think there is such a thing. Pragmatic trials should be using evidence-based implementation strategies, because mm-hmm. the primary outcome is patient health status, and you're going to want to have the clinical intervention delivered with high fidelity so that you're testing that, where the fidelity is being supported by a practical evidence-based strategy. I don't think, because that's the primary outcome is patient health status, that's the way the pragmatic trial should be designed. We know that this practical implementation strategy is going to support high fidelity. That way we can make a good comparison between the two clinical interventions that we're looking at. Hybrid type 2s and 3 trials are really looking at whether the implementation strategy is going to be successful or not. I think those are different types of trials, and they're not the same trial. It's one or the other. That's the kind of the main point of this paper, and the main thing that some people might disagree with.
Mm-hmm. This next question is, I do not understand why having an artificial implementation strategy, for example, posting flyers or recruiting participants, disqualifies a trial as counting as a pragmatic clinical trial. Can you please explain this?
Yeah. So a pragmatic trial is, the purpose is to see whether a clinical intervention is effective if it was deployed in the healthcare system in a routine way. And therefore, the way that patients should be enrolled in the trial should reflect the way that patients are referred into treatment in the usual manner. You don't see, you know, if you walk into your health center, you don't see, you know, flyers or in the elevator saying, come see Dr. So-and-so to get our new treatment. It's just not the way that healthcare systems channel patients into different treatments. So a pragmatic trial should be using methods that mirror the way healthcare systems treat patients as much as possible.
Great, thank you. There are several comments too in the chat just saying what an excellent presentation this was and how much they've appreciated that and that they're looking forward to reading the paper. And someone asked for the citation. I looked for it myself. I wasn't readily able to find it, but you said it was just published in JGIM 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, it's published online April 16th.
Okay, great. So if people go and search, as he said, using the title at the beginning of the slides, you should be able to find that. My apologies. I'm trying to coordinate the questions, so I'm not able to go searching for it right now, but I have no doubt that you'll be able to find it. And thank you for the kind comments for Dr. Fortney. So the next question, can each of these hybrid trial types be applied to an observational study design, meaning comparing two interventions when patients are not randomized but choose their treatment?
Oh, that's a really complicated question. I think Jeff Kern has written some stuff on observational implementation studies. The pragmatic trials and hybrid type 1s and 2s, if you allow patients to choose the treatment, there's almost always the risk of selection bias. which randomization eliminates. So you can do that, but I think the internal validity of your findings will be called into question. David Flum's PCORI grant appendicitis, where they're comparing antibiotics to surgery. A lot of patients declined to consent to participate in that study because they wanted to choose their treatment. I can't quite remember. He might have observed the outcomes of those patients that chose treatment and compared those to those that agreed to be randomized into treatment. And I cannot remember off the top of my head what the differences are in those findings. But certainly if you're allowing patients to choose the treatment while generating great external validity, that does have internal validity bias, internal validity problems associated with self-selection bias.
Thank you. So this question is, and maybe we'll just do two or three more questions and then end so we can make sure that we're cognizant of everyone's time, including yours. So some IRB members do not seem to understand pragmatic trials. Would you be able to offer any advice to investigators who might need to do a little bit of light education or something like that to the IRB to help with this?
I'm having a hard time. I haven't had IRBs have a problem with pragmatic trials. I'm having a hard time guessing at what it is that they're worried about. It could be monitoring the safety of participants, which a pragmatic trial might not do in an artificial way, but the IRB wants them to do that. I can't really answer that one without knowing what the IRB issues are.
That's a good point. We'll see, you know, if the person's able to write a little bit, you know, to help distinguish that, but I understand why there's not enough information. And many people came to my rescue, like about 10 people put in the link to the article in the chat. So it's there many times if people want to look for it. So thank you all so much. Let's see, maybe we can do one more question. Okay, we'll see about this. So thank you so much for the talk, Dr. Forney. Beyond the distinctions made between PT and hybrid trials, can you please elaborate whether PRECISE2 and PRECISE2-PS tools can be applied to hybrid trials? I'm not sure if that...
Yep, no, I know exactly.
Okay.
There's also a PRECISE, I forget what the name is. There's a PRECISE for hybrid trials. It's referenced in the paper. So that's probably the best thing to use rather than the PRECISE that's designed for pragmatic trials. There's a PRECISE, I think it's PRECISE provider something. That's probably the best tool to use for a implementation or a hybrid trial. And Christina, I guess I'll just end by saying, you know, this was complicated for us to write. This paper took about 3 years to write. It got rejected by a bunch of journals.
Wow.
A lot of reviewers didn't like it. It's complex stuff, and I don't think we necessarily got everything right in this paper. We just want to get the dialogue started about these issues. So hopefully it starts a conversation rather than kind of being the end all be all.
Yeah, I appreciate this so much, your efforts for you and your entire team writing this. Clearly it's something, you know, there are many questions still to be answered, and so just the way that this does provide further clarity is so important. And thank you so much for presenting today. You can clearly tell that the audience was so engaged and really interested. And we had like 500 people register for this session. So clearly there's a lot of interest. And thank you so much. And thank you to everyone who joined. And then I think Rob will just mention a brief survey for people to fill out, an evaluation survey, and then we'll close out.
Thank you,
Christine. Yes, attendees, when I close the webinar momentarily, a short survey will pop up. Please do take a few moments and provide answers. Thanks, everyone. Okay, Christine?
Yep, that's great. Thank you so much, Dr. Forney. We truly appreciate your work and this presentation today. And thank you all for joining, and we'll see you next month.